This is DJ Frederick. It's time to light up the lava lamp and crank up the radio time machine. Come on the tonal journey. If you enjoy old shortwave radios, obscure music, and watching the occasional test pattern, you've come to the right place. This is At the Tone. Dark is the Sun. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At the Tone, where we're exploring music for television test cards, film and library music productions, easy tempo jazz, and much more.
אתם מאזינים לגלובל וויס, הרדיו הכי טוב באינטרנט ובכל העולם.
Back in 1981, when we moved into our house on Peabody Street, the very first songbirds I noticed were several evening grosbeaks sitting in a box elder tree right next to our house. One of the evening grosbeaks' favorite foods is box elder seeds, and our two box elders, and then a third that sprouted up in the middle of our yard, gave us a huge advantage in attracting these beautiful birds during all the years they were common or even abundant in Duluth. But the moment she saw it, my mother-in-law told me the box elder next to the house should come down as soon as possible. It was a dangerous hazard. Russ told me not to worry. The tree was too close to the house to pose a danger because it would fall gently if it did fall in the wrong direction. Now, 37 years later, it's still standing. What has changed is how much more devoted I am to it now than I was then, even as evening grosbeaks have disappeared. Over the years, this tree has provided nesting quarters for a few birds that I've been aware of, and probably plenty that I didn't notice. At least one pair of chickadees fledged young from it, and I was very bonded to that particular pair. At the start of the courting season, one was missing its tail feathers, and the other had some weird scar tissue on the face that led to some of the feathers next to the eye growing in backward. The two were probably at the bottom of the flock's social hierarchy for what were really temporary defects, and oddly enough, those defects were exactly why I keyed in on them and made sure of all my backyard chickadees that those two got the best helpings of nutritious mealworms. It was thrilling when they paired off and nested in that box elder, especially because that was a year when we were using what is now my office as our bedroom. I could see and hear them each morning from bed. Chickadees often excavate their own nest holes or use those of downy woodpeckers, and in either case, both species prefer rotten wood. A healthier tree would just not have been the right choice. A pair of red-breasted nuthatches nested in the tree, too, and several gray squirrel families got their start in it. I've taken thousands of photos of birds, including warblers and hummingbirds, perched on old lichen-covered branches very close to the window. That lichen was evidence that the tree is growing increasingly rotten, and indeed those nearby branches were attached to a limb that crashed to the ground in a storm last year. The center of the tree has developed a huge, hollowed-out area where one large rotten limb fell years ago. I'm pretty sure one or the other of a pair of pileated woodpeckers spent nights roosting in that rotted area. For a while last year, the male or female would be calling from the tree at first light. This neighborhood pair spends a lot of time in my yard, and last week when I heard one of them working in a tree, not with loud hammering but more quiet chiseling, I looked out my office window and discovered the male was inside that hollowed-out space digging out grubs. I could only see the side or back of his head occasionally, so I went into the yard to photograph and take videos. He kept at it a good 5 minutes, paying no attention to me or my camera, and then flew south, possibly to a nest tree a block or two away. The tree is beautifully leafed out right now and heavy with seeds. Even I can see it will not live forever. None of us do. But I'm sure glad we didn't sentence it to an early death so many years and experiences ago. And that pileated woodpecker is glad about that, too. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.
Garagozy Group with Hong Kong Wind here on At the Tone.
Celebrating three decades of Pulse of the Planet, here's a program from our archives.
Plants and herbs used by rainforest dwellers have long been the basis for Western medicines. But do indigenous peoples ever reap the benefits of these discoveries? I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the Pulse of the Planet.
When our drugs can get to these people, they'll be far better off than they are now using plant materials which may vary at different times of the year or different times of the day even, and they might have to go half a mile or a mile away to get it, and so forth.
Dr. Richard Evan Schultes is Jeffrey Professor of Biology and Director of the Botanical Museum at Harvard University, Emeritus. He spent years in the rainforests of South America working with indigenous peoples and studying their use of herbal medicines.
Take quinine, a tree that grows natively only in the Andes, discovered from Indians by some Jesuit missionaries and became famous because it cured the wife of the viceroy of Peru, who had a high fever, and some Indians said, this bark will help her. For many years, quinine was the only thing. How many millions of poor people in India, where the rice paddies were the spawning ground of these malarial mosquitoes, how many millions would have died with malaria unless they'd had cheap quinine? But it wasn't a monopoly of the advanced civilized countries. It was available for the whole world.
This archival program is part of our 30th anniversary celebration. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the Pulse of the Planet.
Here at the Global Voice, we're constantly striving to be the best internet radio station, but we can't do that without your help. If you have any comments or suggestions about anything you hear, feel free to contact us anytime by email at feedback@theglobalvoice.info. That's FEEDBACK at theglobalvoice, all one word, .info. And if you're interested in hosting a live or pre-recorded show with us in any language, write to management@theglobalvoice.info. That's management at theglobalvoice.info. The Global Voice. We love to hear from you.
from a 7-inch 45 that was released back in 1970. That was Gin Fizz. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At The Tone. If you'd like to communicate, you could find me on Facebook. We have a group called At The Tone. You could also check into my Twitter, which is at Radio Thrift Shop. Or you can email Frederick at ChristianNewAge.com. That's Frederick at ChristianNewAge.com.
Thank you. broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Voice.
Music by the Space Bomb House Band from their cassette release Library Music 2, Temple of the Engine Room. That was a tune called G-Energy. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At the Tone. Featuring music for test cards, libraries, and lava lamps.
Exploring science in the sea. There aren't many worms that you could truthfully describe as beautiful. One of the few is found in the most colorful environments on Earth, coral reefs. It's known as the Christmas tree worm because it looks like a colorful little fir tree. And it comes in an amazing variety of hues, red, blue, purple, yellow, and many others. The Christmas tree is a polychaete, a worm that's made of several segments. A young worm settles on a coral and then stays put for the rest of its life, which could be as long as 40 years. It burrows into the coral, then lines the tube with calcium carbonate, creating a cozy home. The worm's body is only about 1 to 1.5 inches long, but it has 2 brightly colored crowns that extend outside the burrow. Each spiral-shaped crown consists of wispy, hair-like structures that give the worm its Christmas tree appearance. They serve double duty. They nab tiny plant-like organisms from the water and funnel them down to the worm's stomach. They also serve as gills, pulling oxygen from the water. When the worm is startled, it quickly pulls the crowns down into its burrow, then slams a door behind them. The door is covered with spikes to protect the worm from predators. Christmas tree worms are more than just beautiful decorations, though. They can protect their coral homes from bleaching. And they've been observed to push away the sucker feet of crown of thorns sea stars that eat the living coral. A jolly little present from a beautiful worm. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute at Port Aransas and is available as a weekly podcast at scienceinthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
Versions of Start Growing Up Now by Sven Liebeck from the motion picture soundtrack, The Set. We'll be right back. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At the Tone on the Global Voice.
First the tide rushes in.
The Righteous Brothers with Ebb Tide. Before that, we've heard Paul Keough with Arena, and we started that set off with a band called Sweet Trip and a song called Fish. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You've been listening to At the Tone, music for libraries and lava lamps. I want to say thank you for listening, and I'll join you next week at this time on this station, At the Tone.
Feel fine.